when you are teaching DSJ, what are your aims and goals?
I don't really teach DSJ. I teach engineering, and I don't want to produce engineers that are thinking only about money and the technical aspects of it. I want them to realize they exist in a society, that society has a lot of needs that engineers are well suited to meet or address, and that even if they are going to make a lot of money as an engineer, that doesn't have to be the only thing they do. And some of them may choose not to pursue just the dollars. So I try to, I guess, broaden their horizons in terms of what those needs are and what life is like outside of the U.S. In addition to my Peace Corps and Fulbright, I've done a lot of traveling and been to a lot of different places. So I have a lot of experience that especially the youngest students don't really have the benefit of. So I try to throw that in where possible. And I have another example that actually was an influence that I brought into the classroom. And this was more recent. This was just last summer. So there was a call out for agricultural mechanization experts to work with the National Peace Corps Association, sort of as a consultant, essentially, in Africa. And I'm not a agricultural mechanical expert. But I applied for it because they wanted someone who was a former Peace Corps volunteer, and I do have technical training, and I'm familiar with technology, just not with the agricultural part. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I was accepted for that, and I ended up going to Africa for 6 weeks, based again in Kenya, but traveling to Nigeria and to Burundi and to Mozambique, and visiting with people there, looking at the technology they were using, writing a report with a number of recommendations of how they could better implement and support those technologies. And so that's something that, again, I brought back into the classroom. So the resources, I guess I've sought out, and I would say that's a big resource, because not only did I have my experiences and the pictures that I took there, but I became aware of a number of videos and reports available on the internet that I could apply in class as well. Mm-hmm. So that was an influence that I sought out and has been a rich source, I think, of materials for creating a focus in the discipline of engineering, having the specific examples be something that you would call DSJ-oriented. Mm-hmm. So traditional industrial engineering, human factors area within that, is about ergonomic design, designing machines, tools, and systems that are built with people in mind, not built and then people have to adapt to them. So it's a different mindset than a lot of engineering. A lot of times someone will have a great idea for, say, a tool and build it, and it does work, but it's not that easy for people to work, or it can cause injury if they use it too often. So anyway, as far as mental capabilities, you know, I mentioned the elderly, and I don't go too much more into mental disabilities than that. And then we talk about the capacity for working memory, the ability for how fast people process information. We do some experiments along those lines. And then with special needs, I have a lecture where I talk about all the designs that are designed for people who are disabled in some way physically. And so I go through a whole bunch of examples, and I give them typically a project that involves designing something for people who have a disability. And that's not every year, because I try to make the projects different year to year, but probably 70% of them have been something like that. So designing something for somebody who has one arm instead of two, to do a task that we typically think of as using both arms. Let's see. Oh, there's also a technology that I purchased that's called Brain Fingers. And that is something you put on a headband, and it measures electrical signals that are given out by brain waves and also by moving the muscles in your face. And so it's very interesting. I think it's a real eye-opener, and you actually start to hear about it a little more mainstream now as a modality for a user interface instead of clicking or something along those lines, or, you know, punching the keys. So I've had this for some time, and I use it to demonstrate in class and talk about what the different uses might be. And then I've also done a little bit of research utilizing it. So one of the reasons that this was built is so that people who don't have the use of their limbs can still communicate with the outside world. Because one of the things you do, you hook it up to a computer and you can move a cursor and click the cursor. So there are some very poignant descriptions by disabled people who are extremely disabled. Someone with muscular dystrophy who was essentially losing all muscle control, and they knew it, and it was kind of a slow process, talking about the world of difference it made for them to be able to use this apparatus, to be able to communicate. Because, I mean, if you think about it, it's very difficult to move, very difficult to do anything without assistance, and yet this person can cruise the internet, can compose email, you know, interact with people in ways that would be impossible without the technology. So I try to instill in the students the power that engineering has for transforming people's lives. And I often mention that it's people often who can least afford it who have the biggest potential for that transformation. So communities that maybe can't afford, like a big company can, to hire an engineer. So I try to impress upon them that idea. And I've done things like, there's some standard mathematical techniques that industrial engineers use to optimize systems or whatever you want, if it's a linear system. So typically, you would have a setting in a factory or something else where you have resources and you're trying to maximize output. And so I've given projects, not in this class, but in a different class, mm-hmm. where I've applied that to supplying refugee camps and internally displaced persons. And there was quite a bit in the headlines about that recently, with the Save Darfur movie, and also there was political unrest in Kenya that resulted in a number of people being killed and a number of people being displaced in camps. And I saw those when I was in Kenya for the Fulbright. So anyway, just taking that out of that mathematical method, it's called linear programming, taking it outside of sort of the first world and putting it in a developing world context and showing that you can have a big, big difference there. Mm-hmm. And you can optimize things like number of lives saved or amount tons of grain supplied, mm-hmm. instead of maximizing dollars or widgets or something mm-hmm. along those lines. So as far as the physical abilities and limitations, I think I've covered that now.